Welcome to Common Sense Care, Parenting Gender-Confused Kids with Truth and Love. So-called affirmative care is the gender industry's one-size-fits-all answer for any and all children and youth who struggle with their identity. In no other area of medicine, psychology, or education is one treatment plan assigned to all people. At Partners for Ethical Care, we believe that each child should be treated as an individual and given the care and support that's most appropriate for him or her. Today, we're here talking about my child just announced a transgender identity. What now? And I'm Maria Kepler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And boy, that is a big question. What do we do? Because some parents might think, oh, this is no big deal, and not understand. It's almost akin to a child coming home and saying, I think I might want to take powerful drugs that will delay my development and affect me for the rest of my life. That's basically what they're saying when they announce that they're questioning their gender identity, that they're potentially on a fairly dangerous path.
Yeah. And often what you hear, what parents are told is, it's just social transition. You know, it's just a haircut. It's just different clothes. It's just a different pronoun. It's just a different name. There's nothing permanent about it. But what we are finding is kids who start on a social transition, who start with those sort of superficial changes, almost inevitably move into the next step. Girls wearing the binder, boys starting estrogen, girls starting testosterone. And when you hear kids who detransitioned or desisted, those kids who had claimed a transgender identity for a while but then changed their minds, they say that it's like you never quite get to where you're happy. They think, oh, if I socially transition, that'll make me happy. Well, that doesn't do it. So, okay, well, let me try the binder. Let me try the packer. Let me, you know, oh, that didn't do it either. Okay, maybe hormones will do it. We'll try that. And it's this slippery slope, and it leads almost inevitably to these irreversible medical changes. And kids who have desisted, who have detransitioned, they're just horrified at what they've done to their bodies. If you can deal with this at the outset, you know, get it dealt with right now and try to get kids back on a healthier path, there's just better long-term outcomes associated with that.
And I don't want to scare parents, but I do want to get into it a little bit for parents who are brand new to this and haven't really even heard of transgender, maybe, to talk about some of these things that they're talking about. You mentioned that a lot of kids just say it's going to be a social transition. They're going to cut their hair, they're going to wear different clothes, and they're going to go by a different name and pronouns. And that all sounds pretty benign. But I wanted to get into a little bit, you talked about packers and binders. Can you explain those a little bit?
Yeah, binders or chest binders are a corset-like device that girls wear to flatten their breasts. They are strong, they are powerful, they are crushing. You know, women in China used to bind their feet because having small feet was considered a beauty standard. And it broke their toes, it curled their toes under, it damaged their bodies. And we look at that and say, oh, that's horrible. You know, why would you ever do that to someone? Well, these chest binders are not much different from that. Girls who've worn them for a long time, it damages the breast tissue. They've had cracked ribs, it causes breathing problems. The longer they wear these crushing devices, the more damage it does. Packers are, I'm trying to find a family-friendly way of describing this. It's a fake penis that is made to put in a girl's underwear, and I'm horrified to say they make these for tiny little girls as young as 4 and 5 years old as well, to put in their underwear to look like they have a penis when they don't.
And this isn't just like a sock to make it look like you have a bulge there. These are designed to look very much like an actual penis. And for little girls especially, but really for any girl to put something like that in her panties, to me, it just, it's really disturbing that a child would do this, even a teenager. It really is disturbing to me. And then the other thing that we talked about were the drugs that are given to kids who want to transition. And generally they start with puberty blockers, and those can be given as young as 8 years old. And puberty blockers sounds pretty innocuous. I know that a lot of people say it's just a pause. Do you want to talk about, is it just a pause? Are we just like giving these kids a little bit of time, or is it more sinister than that?
I think it's a lot more sinister than that. You'll hear a lot of people in the gender industry use that phrase, that we're putting a pause button on puberty to give kids time to figure out who they are. But that's really disingenuous. There's no research backing that up, that you can pause puberty. And in fact, there's ample research from endocrinologists who say puberty is a finite window. This is a time of really big changes to your body and your brain, and there is a window for it. And if you miss that window, it's closed and it doesn't open up again. And kids who've been on puberty blockers like Lupron is I think one of the main ones that's prescribed, it damages so much. It damages bone density. It retards brain growth. It retards physical growth. And so you have stopped this child's maturation. It's not, we're just gonna pause it for a little bit and it can restart again. Well, no, the longer that you are on that, the less likely that child is to ever grow, attain full growth.
So when you talk about that, it strikes me that, you know, as parents, we tend to be very concerned about the development of our children to make sure that they're meeting those very important developmental milestones. And it sounds like what this does is actually induce developmental delays.
It does. Looking at, parents who've been terribly worried about, is your child walking on time? Is your child meeting language goals on time? Is your child keeping up with his or her class at school? Well, to suddenly pathologize puberty and say, oh, puberty is an uncomfortable, painful thing we need to stop. Puberty is a painful time for a lot of people. It's a hard time. It's a time of huge growth and change. And it's been uncomfortable for people, and I might say especially for girls, for millennia. That's a normal thing that we need to go through in order to become adults, and to pathologize that really goes against the grain of the rest of education, of child development, of saying my goal for this child is to attain adulthood in a healthy, productive way. I want my children to grow into adults who are physically healthy, mentally healthy, emotionally healthy, and can contribute productively to society. And putting a halt on something as significant in your developmental path as puberty, I think that's indefensible.
It's really confusing. And then on top of that, these kids often want to go on wrong sex hormones, estrogen for boys, testosterone for girls. Can you just give an overview of what those do?
Yeah, those also create some really painful changes for kids who have later desisted. Estrogen for boys and testosterone for girls, it helps to cosmetically alter that child's physical appearance so that they look more like the opposite sex. Estrogen creates breast growth in boys. It will create a larger hips. It puts fat on in places that boys don't typically have fat on them. Testosterone is particularly insidious. It will lower the register of a girl's voice, make her sound like she has a man's voice. It will start hair growth on her face. She will typically have hair loss on her head. Girls who've been on testosterone for a while, they'll have that receding hairline and thinning hair on the head. And many of those changes do not go away. The voice change, that will never go away. If a girl decides that she wants to go off testosterone, once the vocal cords have thickened, they do not thin up again. And that's the difference between the higher feminine voice and the lower masculine voice, is the thickness of the vocal cords. The facial hair does not go away. That will continue for the rest of her life.
Well, and I've also heard that it can impact fertility and also cause the reproductive organs to atrophy, which just, that sounds pretty serious.
Oh, it is. It is. And I think I heard from you, we were talking another time, you gave the analogy of giving wrong sex hormones is like putting diesel gas into an automobile engine that uses unleaded gas. Our bodies were not designed to handle the wrong sex hormones. And yeah, girls who've been on testosterone for a while, their uterus, fallopian tubes, ovaries will tend to atrophy because they're not being restored and cared for by the wash of estrogen, which is what the female body was designed to run on. And so they'll often have to have a radical hysterectomy. You've been on cross-sex hormones for a while, you will probably not have children. It does damage so many systems in the body, and that's a particularly painful one. Because I don't think many kids say, oh, I can't wait to be a parent. You know, some do. Some kids are like, I want to be a mom, I want to be a dad. But most of us, I know when I was younger, I was like, yeah, I'll probably have kids someday. I don't know. I don't really like kids. I don't really. But once you pass through puberty, you grow into adulthood, your brain finishes its development around the age of 25, because our brains don't finish developing until that time. You have radically different ideas about who you are, what you want from your life at 25 than you did at 15. So putting kids on a path of no return at 15, 16, 17 is just unconscionable.
And then you compound that with these kids who want surgeries. So girls as young as 13 want their breasts removed sometimes, and doctors are doing this. Surgeons are willing to do this. So removing the breasts for boys getting castrated, having their testicles removed. I mean, that is irreversible. There's no doubt about that. And it's also like any kind of elective cosmetic surgery really should be questioned in anybody, but especially in children who are grappling with these identity issues.
Yeah. And I hear people say, oh, you can go back and get breasts again. You know, a particular gender industry therapist has been caught on video saying, oh, if a girl decides that she wants breasts again, she can just go get them. No, they're not the same. Once you get your breasts removed, sure, you can have reconstructive surgery at a very expensive cost, but they will never nurse a baby with those breasts. The milk ducts have been severed. They're not coming back. The sensation, they will never have a pleasurable sexual sensation with the breast. And also with the reconstructive gender genital surgeries, they have so many issues with infection, inability to urinate well, with the sexual dysfunction. They will never have normal sexual function down there because we cannot reproduce what nature created. And damaging that for cosmetic reasons in childhood is just unethical. That's just one of the most unethical things to do to children that I can think of.
And so that's something that I think is really important, is that people who are part of the transgender movement suggest that those who don't support children in their gender identity are being hateful, that they're potentially putting their children at risk because they're not affirming their child. And yet, based on, you know, the information that I have and what we've talked about today, it's very clear to me that if a child starts down that path, it's a path towards dysfunction, developmental delays, long-term side effects, basically medicalizing a child for the rest of their life. And so this really isn't about affirming a child. It's about looking out for the best interest of a child and what's healthy. And generally speaking, experts and parents don't try to affirm a child in something that's going to damage them. And that's what I think this is all about. It's not about saying that your child has to be gender conforming. It's suggesting that going down this transgender path has really significant negative long-term outcomes.
I agree with everything you've said, Erin. And when a child announces a transgender identity, they do need support and they do need affirmation of their feelings. These are real, genuine struggles that these kids are having. They need compassion. They need support. but they need parents and experts who are looking after their long-term good, not just conforming to momentary social pressure to do a particular thing. So as we look at our own children, we want to ask, okay, what's going on? Why is my child feeling this way? How can I validate that, yeah, you're really struggling. I see that you're suffering. Let's talk about how we can help you. And so how do we be those kinds of parents? How do we address our kids' real, heartfelt, serious needs while looking at the whole child and saying, let's find the best path for you that's going to bring you to a place of healing? So I would love to hear from you, because you have so much history and knowledge about what this path looks like. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
All right. Well, one of the things that strikes me, for those who don't know, I actually had a transgender identity as a kid. And it was very powerful. I was very adamant that I was a boy, and that my teachers should treat me like a boy and call me by the boy's name that I wanted. I acted like a boy. I didn't want to be in boy sports. And so I was very determined to convince the world that I was a boy. And in my head, I was pretty sure I was a boy. I was like, you know, kids have magical thinking, and they actually can get into a mindset where they're like, they can first kind of flirt with the idea and then really believe that there's something that they're not. In my case, I had therapists and parents and teachers who did not affirm me, and they didn't tease me and they didn't dismiss me. And I think that's really important, that, you know, parents might hear this and some parents might just say, oh, that's ridiculous. Like, you know, my kid's not a boy, or my daughter's not a boy, my son's not a girl. What are you talking about? This makes no sense, and really dismiss it. And I think it's important to take this seriously, because this is coming from very strong feelings that a child has. At the same time, I'm so very grateful that my school sent me to the school psychiatrist to sort of assess me and figure out what was going on and come up with a treatment plan. These days, if you send your child to the school psychiatrist or school counselor, it's not unlikely that that counselor will say, oh, you think you're a boy, you are a boy, and then go ahead and affirm that child, which means allowing them to use the boys' bathroom if they're a girl, allowing them to use the opposite sex locker room facilities, calling them by the name they want and the pronouns that they want. And what this does is it reaffirms these ideas in a child's head. So rather than questioning it in a kind and compassionate way, you're just saying, oh, okay, if that's what you believe, we'll go for it. And a lot of this is coming, I think, from kindness and the belief that this is the right thing to do, without the understanding of the implications of affirming that we talked about earlier. And so I think it's really important to take this seriously. Don't dismiss it, but also not affirm it, and also not to completely freak out, because if kids see a parent freaking out, that does a lot of weird things to the dynamic. And this is asking a lot of parents. We know it's asking a lot, because we're sort of saying, you know, you get this heavy bomb dropped on you and you have to respond in this compassionate, kind, caring way. Don't overreact. Don't underreact. And I'm curious what some of the experts have to say about this, Maria.
I loved what you said about not putting a child on a path of just automatic affirmation, because we know from an educational and a child development background that what you tell a child will believe. Children believe trusted adults. And I believe it was Johann von Goethe said, treat a man as he is and he will remain what he is. Treat him as he ought to be and he'll become what he ought to be. And so what the people around you reflect to you reinforces what you believe about yourself. That's just really basic psychology, social psychology. So if you are constantly being told, let's say you're suffering from anorexia, and the people around you are telling you, yes, you really are fat. Yes, I agree with you. You should get your stomach stapled. You should take some more diet pills. That person will die. That person will die from that advice. You would never do that to an anorexic. And so what we tell kids about themselves is vitally important to what they believe about themselves and the decisions that they will make in the future. And I also just wanted to say, I love what you said to parents about just be calm, be patient, don't freak out. And it is okay to say to your child, I don't understand this. I'm completely at a loss. I need you to tell me more. I need to hear from you. I need you to explain this to me. And I need some time to think about this and to try to understand it. Please be patient with me as I try to understand, because I want to get what you're going through.
You know, I know that there were times as a child where I felt stupid. And if I had gone to my teacher and said, I'm stupid, and she said, oh, you're right, you are stupid, that would not have been helpful. Kids go through stages where they feel stupid, they feel ugly, they feel unloved, and we really would not suggest that teachers or parents or other adults in these kids' life affirm those feelings. And yet in this case, this very strange case, we're saying, even though this potentially can lead to lifelong damage, that it should be affirmed. And so it's a very strange thing that this transgender movement is suggesting, really. And I was wondering if you wanted to hear from Sasha Ayad. She is a therapist who works with teenagers and has some really good insights about how you should respond when a child comes to you and says that they're questioning their gender identity.
Parents have to recognize that their child is undergoing one of the most confusing periods in their life. Very lovingly, very kindly, say, look, I see that this is a struggle you're going through, and I don't know what this means, but we're going to get through this together. I'm here for you.
Parents can do lots of things to strengthen relationships. And sometimes that's all that a child needs. It's just some time with their parents. And I know that we're told over and over again that the most important relationships in a child's life are their peers, but they're starting to question that now. And I think a lot of parents sort of have abdicated their role as parents because they think, oh, their peers are more important now. I don't really need to parent. And that's just not true in this case. And in most cases, teenagers really do need parent figures in their lives to guide them.
Yeah, they do. And this time of adolescence, especially, we're kind of focusing on that period because there's so many kids who are announcing this during adolescence and puberty. But this time in their lives is so formative for them because it's the time they're starting to leave the den and move into the forest. Mm-hmm. They're starting to grow up and prepare to leave home. And so those outside influences, their peers and people outside the home, do start to become more important for them. And their focus often shifts that direction. But they still very much need that safe, secure home base. And in an ideal world, the children are close enough with their parents and trusting with their parents that the child can venture out into the forest and start interacting with it. But the parents are still there watching. And if the parent sees something where the child is going in a direction they shouldn't, the parent kind of pulls the child back to the den and says, hey, this is not a healthy thing. Here's what I see happening. We're not going to let that happen because until children are 18, they are still legally under the care of their parents, and parents have that right and that responsibility to say, no, this particular thing is not healthy. I'm not going to let you go there. And then the child goes out in another direction that's a healthy direction, and the parent says, that's great. You're doing a fantastic job there. I love the grades you're getting. I love the way you're, you know, working in that part-time job. So it really is the parents' responsibility and privilege to guide their kids away from unhealthy paths and toward healthy paths all the way until the children are fully functioning adults in their own right.
Well, and it sort of reminds me of a child who's self-harming. If a child had some issues and was doing some significant self-harm and a parent just ignored that or even affirmed that, we would realize that that's problematic. We don't do that. And I think if parents can shift their thinking about this, that this isn't about affirming a child in their true selves. Mm-hmm. It's actually affirming self-harming behavior, because that's the road this leads to. And so we wouldn't, you know, if a child wanted to cut themselves, we wouldn't say, oh, that's okay. or starve themselves, as we mentioned in the case of an anorexic, or is engaging in really dangerous behaviors. Parents' right, and as you said, responsibility is to pull the kid back in and help to guide them. And so it really is, this is a time when parents can have a huge influence on a child. And we have some questions from some parents who have actually had children who have gone down the transgender path. And we asked them, what would you have liked to have known when you first encountered this? And I think this can be really informative to parents who are just coming into this the first time, or maybe parents who haven't, but who, you know, these days you just don't know what might walk in the door. So it's always good to have some information about, you know, what should I know about this if my child does come in and say, I think that I'm transgender?
The first question that we got relates very well to Sasha Ayad's counsel. She said, the parent asks, what should my primary goal be? Mm-hmm. What is the most important thing to focus on first? The first thing is your relationship with your child. You don't want to damage the relationship by freaking out or ignoring the problem. I think probably a parent's first instinct when this happens is like, I've got to stop this. What's the right words? What's the right logic? What's the right thing to do to make this stop right now? And unfortunately, it's probably not going to stop quickly because this is such a deep heart issue with the child. You want to try to realign your child with your family because unfortunately, schools, social media, what's going on out in the world is really disaffirming the importance of the family. They're telling kids, if your parents don't automatically tell you it's great that you're transgender, they're homophobic, transphobic, hateful, bigoted, toxic. Those are just lies that are separating kids from the primary relationship of their lives, the most important people to protect and care for them, and that's their parents. And so parents have to do double work in helping their children see, oh, you know what, mom and dad are actually not hateful, they're not toxic, they love me a lot, they care about me. And I think one way you can do that is by actually trying to shift the focus a little bit away from the transgender identity issue and focus on things you can do with your kids. If your child has an activity that he or she really loves, try to do it with them. Take them roller skating, take a cooking class with them. Try to establish that you are their friend, you are their cohort more than the world is, and really strengthen that relationship.
And I think that what you said is so important because I've seen both ends where parents completely ignore the problem and think it will just go away on its own. And I've also seen parents who have freaked out so much that they become incapacitated to really build that relationship with their child. And as you said, this is not something that's likely going to resolve in a couple of days, a week, couple months, maybe not even for years. And so you have to sort of steel yourself for the long haul. And if you're in the middle of crisis and just completely freaking out about this, then you're not going to be able to build that relationship with your child. And so I think it's sort of like the bomb goes off, and rather than like running away or just pretending like it's not there, you have to say, okay, this is a new reality that we have to deal with. And I'm strong and I can handle this, and I need to focus on my child, because if I let myself freak out, I'm not going to be able to parent the child the way the child needs me to.
Yeah.
And it would be understandable to freak out. I don't want parents to feel like they're judged, because this is a huge thing. And so, you know, self-care and finding support for yourself is going to be so important, because this
is... I think we're going to talk about that in a later episode, is how to get support for yourself and self-care.
Yeah,
a parent I know who found a really good therapist for her child, and we're going to talk about that in a later episode too, is how to find a responsible therapist.
Yes.
But this therapist met with the child and then said to the parent, I think your child's going to be fine. I think your child's going to come through this, but I think it's going to take longer than you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
And I thought that was
kind of have to like, yeah. So the next question that we have is, I discovered my child's trans identity on her social media account, which she doesn't know I can see, but she hasn't come out to us yet. Should I bring it up with her or wait until she brings it up? Which is a great question.
That's a tough one. My first just sort of gut reaction to that is to ask, how important is it to you that your child doesn't know that you can see their social media?
Yep.
If you really need to maintain that sort of spy hole there, that you can keep an eye on this without your child knowing, you're probably going to have a harder time bringing it up. If you're willing to out yourself and go, you know, I actually can see what's going on in your social media, and I saw this and I'm concerned, can you tell me more about this? And I think the way you phrase it is always so important with kids. If you can ask more questions than you make statements, mm-hmm. I think you're gonna have a little bit more success rather than coming to the child and saying, hey, I saw this on social media, you know.
What's going on?
But if you can just say, hey, you know, I have to admit, I've been lurking on your social media. I saw this thing that I really don't understand. Can you tell me more about that? That's a really good phrase to keep in your toolkit. Can you tell me more about that?
The other thing I think is, if you don't feel comfortable admitting it, to just, again, use those skills to start strengthening your relationship with your child. Start spending more time with them. Start asking really general questions. Because as you said, if you start asking questions and you have a good, solid relationship with your child, they might start opening up to you and then you don't have to out yourself. So I think that there are two approaches here, and it just depends sort of on how you think your child's going to react. I know that some children will just completely freak out if they feel like their child, their parents have been spying on them, and it could really undermine the relationship, as well as you said, that the insights that they're getting from lurking on that social media. There are other children who might really be like, oh, I had no idea. Let me tell you about this. And so I think part of it is just judging your child and kind of getting how they're going to react, because really what you want to do here is build that relationship. And so you want to move forward with that. And if you think that outing yourself is going to undermine your ability to do that, then you might want to think of some other strategies.
Yeah. Well, and another thing that's important to keep in mind, especially during adolescence and the teen years, it can really feel like your kids hate you and want nothing to do with you. They're really good at communicating that, but that's actually not the truth. They want a relationship with their parents. They want to feel cared for. They want to feel known. They want to feel seen. And just like with small children need the discipline. They need the authority. They need the watching. And it provides them a sense of safety. Older kids do too, and sometimes even more, because they feel themselves moving out of the den and into the forest, and that can freak them out. They can go in 5 minutes from, I am an adult and I am in charge of my destiny and I need no one, to, oh, I just want my mom to hold me and make me a cup of hot cocoa. And that's part of what's so hard for teenagers, is they're flipping back and forth between those things. But at the end of the day, they want relationship with their parents. They want to be known. They want to be seen. They want to be loved and cared for. And I think keeping that goal in mind is, what will this do to my child's relationship with me? Will this improve it or will this damage it? That will help guide a lot in your decision making. You may and are likely the only one who is going to save your child from going down a really unhealthy path. And I'm sorry to say that you're probably going to be alone in this for a while until you find some other support, some other gender critical, meaning people who are questioning the gender narrative, to kind of support you on this. But you are gonna have to steel yourself. You're gonna have to get ready for some opposition, and you're gonna have to be ready to just make a stand for your child. And say, this is what I'm going to do with my child to protect him or her.
And there are resources out there. I'll list some in the description of this video. One of them is Partners for Ethical Care. If you go to their website, there's a lot of information there. And there's also a form that you can submit and an online chat, so you can get some support from some people right away. there's somebody there who can, help work you through this right away, give you some resources. There's actually support out there. You just have to work to find it.
Yeah. And I think in our next episode, we're going to talk about having some of those conversations with your child. We're going to talk about validation and invalidation, as well as critical thinking, how to approach this in a way that affirms your child's feelings, but does not affirm wrong thinking, and how to approach that as a parent having those conversations with your child.
And I want to end this just by giving parents hope. That this is really, we've given a lot of information. Some of it's really disturbing and maybe scary, but there is hope.
You need help, you need support, and you need a roadmap. And we're in the business of trying to write some roadmaps. We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcome. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined us in our conversation today, and we hope you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth and love.